Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to In the Know with Mo. This is your host, Maureen Forte. Tonight I have a very special guest on In the Know with Mo. Tonight my guest is Ruby Shuttlesworth Vester. And tonight's show is titled Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth, The Struggle Continues. And we're talking about the history. 50 years ago in 1963, the late Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth, a civil rights icon, he stood on the Lincoln Memorial steps, and he spoke along with the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. But tonight I have one of four of his children on the radio tonight, and we're going to talk about 50 years later, have things changed? Who is Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth? Who was he? And how did he get involved with the civil rights leader, Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.? So I want to welcome Ruby Shuttlesworth Vester to the show. Welcome, Ruby.
Thank you, also, Maureen. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah,
that's my nickname. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, darling.
We just want to welcome you to the show. We have so many listeners online. We know this is the anniversary date of September 11th of 2001. Mm-hmm. But this is such a historical month, a historical time, and I just want to invite you on because we just returned from Washington, but we need to know the true story. And the only way to get the true story is from a person who was there, and you are one of many that was there when your father, the late Reverend Fred, the civil rights icon, spoke in Washington. So I want to open the doors for you to talk to the world about Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth.
Well, Daddy was a very unique individual. He was highly intelligent, and he insisted that education was the best thing that you could get. First of all, it was God. You need to know the Lord. And then you had to go and prepare yourself. Daddy went to Birmingham in 53. And as soon as he got there, he petitioned. They were trying to get the police in 53, black policemen even then. But in 55, he was membership chairman for the NAACP. But the governor outlawed the NAACP in Birmingham. And so within a week, Daddy formed the Alabama Christian Movement for Human Rights at Sardis Baptist Church. And 1 year later, on Christmas night, we got our gift from the whoever for having done that, and our house was bombed. And but Daddy was always confronting the things that were wrong. And he believed in the Constitution. And so when the decision came that schools were to be desegregated, Daddy felt that they would not, the decision was with all deliberate speed. He felt that they weren't going fast enough. So he took my sister, Nathaniel Lee, myself, my mother, and Reverend Pfeiffer was driving the car to Phillips High School. And he was beaten severely. Howard K. Smith filmed the incident that happened. That was in 57. I was 12 at that time. And then when it was time in 61, when the Freedom Riders were coming through, one of the young men, James Peck, was brought to our home. And, you know, in the South you had this room, the guest room, and it was a room with a beautiful white spread. This young man was so bloody that we had to discard the spread. But it stuck in my mind as a child that this man and his parents were, I think they were with some big company. They were millionaires. But he got on the bus to come down for us, and it put a new face on this thing called freedom and seeking to do right, because he didn't have to do it. He had a very nice life, but he chose to do it. It was a matter of the heart. And that was in 61. And then I graduated, and we came here to Cincinnati because my mother felt that my sister Pat was already at Spelman, but my daddy was making so little money in order for me to go the next year, my brother Fred Jr. to go the next year, we needed to move. And he had been offered a church in Cincinnati, so it was at Ruby Kay, my mother's insistence, that we left in 61, just as the Freedom Riders, and he was very deeply involved in that. But at the time of the march, we went from Revelation Baptist Church in Cincinnati, my sister and I, along with Miss Georgia Sanford and some other young ladies from the church, to the march. And I was really taken, having been in the South, where it was totally segregated. I had always gone to school with black children. There was no mixing of the races at all for anything. We couldn't even go to the amusement parks there. But to be there with that massive group of loving people, all colors, all denominations, carrying signs, everybody helping everybody, it was good for me to feel that and to be a part of that. And I know everybody that was at that march felt that. And when we got to the Lincoln Memorial, I and a lot of other people had our feet into the thing. And I noticed this year that they had that blocked off so that people couldn't miss their feet. But anyway, it was just wonderful. So my history has been a history of witnessing what was done in Birmingham, Alabama. And it basically started in 53. It escalated to a lot of negative in 56 when the house was bombed. But Daddy had a belief that if you wanted something, you had to ask for it. And consequently, he was before the United States Supreme Court about 35 times. It wasn't for robbing or stealing or killing. It was for marching and protesting and strategizing to make things better, not for just black people, but for all people. That's why the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute gives a yearly award in November. Andrew Young is going to get it November 15th, and it's called the Fred Scholzer Human Rights Award. And that's what this whole thing is about. You know, the Lord created all of us. And whatever our religion, whatever our belief, however rich we are, if we cut, we all bleed red. So we're all the same, and people need to know that. But Daddy fought hard for that all of his life, and he used to have a statement, if you can't take it, you can't make it. And he just believed that. So he was always in the forefront. I'm very proud of him. When he was 80 years old, he took us on a tour of all the cities that we had lived in, Mobile, Montgomery, Selma, and Birmingham, and to celebrate his birthday. But he wanted us to see the history. And it was then that I knew that I needed to document what had happened. I had been, you know, we've always been followers of Daddy, whether it was at church, in the movement, or whatever. But I realized that I needed to put down exactly what had happened, because he taught us how to live lovingly. Yeah. This in October, 1 year after he passed, I had a conference. It was called in honor of my parents. It was talking about his nonviolence and unconditional love. And if we can do anything today, we must teach this to our kids, because they're out of sorts. They don't know what they don't know. And if they did know our rich history, and I do mean our rich history as a country, we have survived so many things because we come together, but we need to come together more. We need to come together in the true spirit of democracy and freedom, where everybody, to me, education and health care should be a flat thing. Everybody should get the same advantage. And when you deny some and give to others, you're already setting up problems later on. So we need to relook at how we do things. I hope I answered your question.
You have, and you know what? I just want people to know, you know, Reverend Fred was a U.S. United States civil rights activist who led the fight against segregation and other forms of racism as a minister, as you stated, in Birmingham, Alabama. But what I want the people, and I want, and you're the only one, you and the rest of the family can testify on his involvement, how he came to be part of Dr. King, and who, and when Dr. King came to Birmingham, he was invited there.
Daddy had invited him several times to Birmingham. Mm-hmm. But the Alabama Christian Movement was formed in 1955. The Southern Christian Leadership Conference was formed in 1957. Daddy was elected as a secretary. Reverend King was the president. There was Reverend C.T. Vivian, Reverend Y.T. Walker, that I can remember offhand, and Reverend Abernathy. And there were, I think Dr. Jemison was also involved in that also. But they worked together, and wherever the action was, whatever city was confronting a law, because back then, whatever the segregated law was, you had to first break the law, go to court, win the case, and then you go on. When we petitioned to go to Phillips High School, it was September of 57. We didn't win that case until 1963, and the petition had Ruby Frederica Shuttlesworth versus the Birmingham Board of Education. But we were all, we were in college, but there were some children. There was one child, Dwight Armstrong, that was on the suit also, and his older brother had been on it originally, but his younger brother was escorted by Daddy and Mr. Armstrong into that Graymont school in 1963. So it was a historic thing that happened after, but you have to first break the law, go to court and get it adjudicated, and then it's passed that way. But he invited Dr. King. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. I was just going to ask, so it seems like that the Shuttlesworth children were the first ones to integrate a school, not Ruby Bridges. Am I correct?
I don't know the date that she went. We went September 57. I'm not sure the date that she integrated. I do have that book, When I retired, one of the teachers at my school gave me that book. And then I met her. And Daddy received the Presidential Award in January of 2001. And Ruby Bridges was one of the people there, along with, I think, Muhammad Ali, Elizabeth Taylor, and I forget some others. But it was really wonderful with President Clinton. And this year, Reverend C.T. Vivian is getting the Presidential Award. I think it's in November. Okay. So it's good that they can be rewarded. And I'm so thankful that Daddy lived to see the airport, the statue, and things. So he know, and he always said, I'm going to wear out and not rust out. And he did.
Yes.
He continued the fight long into when people would retire. But Daddy asked Reverend King to Birmingham several times. But like I say, as a group, SCLC decided where they would go. But when he invited him in 63, he came. And that's when the Bulldogs and the Bulldogs and Eugene Bull Connor attacked the children. And but it made a difference. The people were not afraid. The only thing I hate about that whole incident is that I went down because I've been researching, trying to find the names of the children. They put the names of the adults, but they never listed the children. And I've been trying to, every time I look at pictures, and I have my one friend, Francis, who was one of those children, Virginia Fields, who was another of those children. Well, they were the adults then, so they were listed, but there were children, 2,000, I forget how many. But we met with Mr. Goosby. I took an educational tour to Birmingham and Atlanta this summer, and we met with Mr. Goosby. He was one of the first group of 50 young people to come out. And the way he told the stories, it was so amazing. Our young people were fascinated listening to the stories. But getting back to what you asked me, when he came in 63, that's when it had already been, it was called Project C, Confrontation. And it was all planned. They always prayed first, and then they strategized. Because back in 63, if you ever watched this movie, The Children's March, it shows how Dr. King asked for volunteers, and the people couldn't because they knew they could lose their jobs, their house could be bombed, any number of atrocities. But the children did. And to see how those kids were jumping out of windows and running, it was just amazing. Everybody should see that movie because it tells how in another good thing to watch is The Four Little Girls, because that shows the impact of the madness of our society at that time. But it was worth it. It was so worth it because of those acts of courage from ordinary men. We have a better society today. But as far as your topic, go ahead, darling.
And then here we are 50 years later. And for those of you who are listening to this interview, if you go on the blog site, you can see a photo of the late Reverend Fred on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. You'll see photos of Ruby Bester, who is speaking now, Ruby Shuttlesworth Bester, and her siblings. I have photos of the family on the website also. But here we are 50 years later, and my question, Dr. King was there for the jobs and justice, and I have a person just asked a question on the internet site here. Did the marching make a difference, and do we or should we continue to march today? Do you see any changes 50 years later?
I think we're regressing because we don't. Yes, the marching did make a difference, but it was done non-violently, okay?
Yeah.
The one thing that the reason that the people won then is because they were trained. When they even taught the kids, Reverend Vivian and the others, when you are arrested, take the barrettes out of your hair, take the pencils and pens, take off your rings, because you don't want to get an additional charge because something that you had on you scratch the officer. But our children, 50 years later, we have regressed because our kids don't know what happened. They don't know what we went through. We have missed the mark. Now, when I was growing up, when we left Birmingham, it had been such a. It was very frightening at times. We had people guarding our home, our house. They built a guardhouse in back of our house after our first house was bombed. They built a house across the street, but they also built a guardhouse in back of our house. There was a guardhouse on the front porch of Mr. Revis next door. And my friend Francis lived next door, and Mr. Smiley was across the street. So we had to be guarded at all times. So when we left in 61, I got into college and just went on to do things that we did up here, and I didn't really think about the movement except, you know, when we went down for things. Every time a person that guarded our house died was in the movement, we always went down for their funeral. So it would come back then. But Ellen Levine came to my school, Princeton, about 15 years later into my teaching career, and she was writing a book, Freedom's Children. And as I interviewed with her and told her my brother, sister, and Francis and James Robeson to interview also, it started to come back, and I realized that I had done a disservice to my children in not sharing and to other children. And that's when I started putting back together, because there was a reason for our victory. Number one, it was the Lord. Number two, it was working together and respecting each other. And then those men moved at any time. When we went to Mobile and they honored Daddy on his 80th birthday, the man said, we were so happy that Reverend Shoulders, whenever we called him to come to Birmingham, he said, if you could just get me a place to stay and help me with the gas, I'd be glad to come. And that was the attitude. There was no big I's and little U's. It was just people working together for betterment of, at that time, of the black people, because we were in bad shape. When I came to UC, that was the first time I'd ever sat in the classroom with a white student. So it was culture shock. But, you know, this, we have to realize that as much as we've done, we have failed to put in our children that camaraderie, that honesty, that taking care of each other that we used to have because we just didn't have any other means. And the second class citizenship has become fifth class for some people. I mean, it's really bad how we as a people, and I do mean Americans in general, we pick and choose who will be the haves and who will be the have-nots. We create laws for that, and that's just wrong. When President Kennedy asked that, he in his speech, he said, but for Birmingham, we would not be here today. And it's so true. They suffered in Birmingham to get a lot of things done today, but our young people, and it's so sad, because I'm an educator, are not taking advantage. And I keep thinking, what more could we have done? Well, one thing, we could have told them what we did, what we had to do, and how it was. But our history has not been told. And I don't mean just the black history. I mean American history. We've covered so many things. Yes, we have covered too many things up. It is what it is, but we have to make it better. We have to make it better.
I think one thing, too, because here we have so much technology now, 50 years later, we have so much technology and we're able to embrace and share the knowledge. That's why I like Facebook for the historical parts that I'm able to share the history on. And it's going to be up to all of the generations to keep the history, because all of our families have a history. And, you know, the truth is not in the book, but we can tell the truth. I know Reverend Fred and myself are history makers, and that's a website that I encourage and tell all teachers, educators, to take your students to that website. I mean, that's a website, the historymakers.org, full of African-American historians who have made a difference in our society. But it's up to families, like our family, to keep the history, because the truth has to be told. You know, in Washington, all these ministers didn't like Dr. King, and there's so many people that don't know the true history of Fred Shuttlesworth's work. All they know is what somebody is putting bits and pieces, and I really try to keep them abreast of what's going on. And I commend you for all the work that you're doing, because I know you have something else on your agenda coming up with your 89 minutes. It's coming up soon.
Yeah, I decided to do that, and I refined it. I started out of the book saying, thank you, Reverend Shuttlesworth. And I was thanking him, my mother, my brother, my sisters, the guards, the people that marched, the people that helped make the signs. Because see, back then, if you were violent, you couldn't go. You had to stay back and cook, drive people, make the signs. But it was a people movement. And when they had the airport, she sent me 5 tickets. I said, "Is the public coming to the airport?" She said, "Sure." And she opened up an airport holder, and buses and planes came in because it was the people that did it. And I think sometimes we pick a leader, but we got to remember that we have to have people helping that leader do what he does.
Exactly.
So I'm writing that book. Thank you, Reverend Shuttlesworth. And also I'm writing a book about unsung heroes, because I've traveled with Daddy a lot. In fact, I retired early so that I could go, because he had that brain tumor, so I could travel with him, Fred and I. And I realized how much I had to do. I'm going to get it done, but I'm working on it very hard now, and I am so thankful. I was at this thing last Friday, the Birmingham Association of Black Journalists. It was wonderful. They had these news people. One was from New York, one was from Mississippi, one was there from in Birmingham, And they were talking about your topic, the struggle. Does it continue? What have we done? And then Doug Jones, the prosecuting attorney for the man that bombed Cherry, the one that bombed 16th Street, he did a presentation that I was just spellbound. We need to know our history, and I do mean what happened in Birmingham, what happened in Montgomery, what happened in Selma. And then there's a book called There's a Selma Up North, too. I mean, racism is in so many places, and we have to look at how we can make it better. We did miss out on telling our kids and doing more, but now that we know what we need to do, we need to do it. We need to correct our history. And I commend the state of Alabama for keeping such excellent records. I think they were keeping records about 25 years before the United States started keeping records. So that's what's good about that. We need to tell it like it is and move forward together. We are living in the greatest country. We're a melting pot. But if we take your strength, my strength, his strength, her strength, and put them together, what a great country we would have for all people. And that's what we have to do. We have to make sure that everybody gets an opportunity to be the very best that they can be. And as educators, I commend you so much. I always tell you, I don't know how you do it, because you work really hard. But you work for those people who can't do for themselves.
Yeah.
Hopefully when they can get out and get to moving, they are motivated to go on and help other people. We've stopped that, you know.
Yeah.
Back in the old days, if I had dinner, you could have dinner. I'm sorry. Go ahead, dear.
I try to be that voice of the voiceless. Try to be that extra hand, try to move people forward. But we're coming to the end of our time.
I am so sorry.
We're coming to the end of our time. Our music is playing, and we will be back on again with my special guest, Ruby Shuttlesworth-Bester, on the 15th, which will be the anniversary of the bombing of the 16th Street Church in Birmingham, and I welcome her back. But I want all of you that are listening to play this interview, email it, because this is history. And I am very proud to say that this is my cousin. We are related. So you can see where the struggle comes from that I have. It's because it's ingrained in the family. And as we continue to move forward, I want to thank you. Much love to you, Ruby. And
I
want to thank those that tuned in tonight to In the Know with Mo. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.